Could Uber and London's black cabs finally merge lanes? Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne, and a very good morning to you. In 2012, Uber shook up the UK's taxi scene, causing a stir with one of the world's most recognisable taxi fleets, London's black cabs. Black cab drivers blockaded the city streets in 2014 to protest against what they argued was a lack of proper regulation for app-based operators. Now, surprisingly, Uber says it will open up its platform to London's black cabs early next year. My colleague Will Bain has been finding out more about the plans from Andrew Brem, the UK General Manager of Uber.
As of next year, Londoners will be able to request a black cab on the Uber app. And in fact, as of this morning, the first black cab drivers are signing up to become drivers on the Uber app. Speaking to black cab drivers, they absolutely use apps now. The vast majority use apps. And when we spoke to them, the majority were open to using the Uber app. I think time's moved on. It really has done. We turned a page as Uber many years ago now, and I think this is the time to rekindle a partnership with black cab drivers. And look, London is in fact unusual for Uber in that respect. So there are 33 countries around the world where taxis are on the Uber app. I mean, the yellow cabs in New York are on the Uber app, in San Francisco, in Washington, D.C., in Paris, in Rome. I mean, it's totally normal to have a taxi as well as a private hire vehicle on the Uber app. Of course, it's up to drivers whether they join, and we're going to see how it goes. But I'm enthusiastic about it.
You've been speaking to them. We've been speaking to them too. Here's a little snapshot of what they had to say to us.
Absolutely not. 100% no. Never.
No, I wouldn't sign up to Uber now because I'm on two or three different apps already, which apply plenty of work. So
they're not professional cab drivers, and I disagree with them being allowed on the streets of London, considering what we've done to get our licence.
Too much bad history. There's no way you should sleep with the enemy.
Sounds like your work cut out.
Well, we may have our work cut out, but it's absolutely the choice of drivers. And when we're speaking to them, a huge majority are open to not only using apps, but using Uber. And as I say, you know, at the end of the day, it's about more fares. Mm. It's about being busy. I think all drivers want to be busy, whether they're London cab drivers or whether they are private hire drivers. And look, we respect them. You know, they do a great job for London. They're totally iconic. They are really wanted by Londoners and by tourists alike.
That was Andrew Brem from Uber speaking to the BBC's Will Bain. Now, let's do the numbers. Good news for Spain. Prices for things like gas and travel have eased, which means inflation came down to 3.2% in November. Eurozone inflation might also drop when those numbers come out later this week. Meanwhile, Asian stocks, all broadly, closed down. Now, a nation relieved. You've just heard the joyous cheers as ambulances whisked away the 41 Indian construction workers who were stuck for 17 days in a collapsed tunnel in the Himalayas. The men, hailing from some of the poorest parts of India, were finally pulled alive through a pipe. But this incident has prompted questions about the pace of development in Himalayan states like Uttarakhand. Hemant Dayani is an environmentalist who knows the area well.
The Himalayas are one of the most major hotspots for the impacts of climate change. The developmental model centered on the GDP growth is just based on destruction of environment. We are not saying no development. We need road. We need energy. The method of the road building, this is the high time to recognize the carrying capacity of the terrain and categorize the activities, that these activities should be prohibited, these should be regulated. In this way, we can ensure the longer-term sustainable livelihood.
Environmentalist Hemant Dayani there. As COP28, that's the UN's climate conference, kicks off in Dubai tomorrow, all eyes are on China's role. Some worry about its increasing use of coal power. But China has also been rolling out vast new green energy projects, positioning itself to dominate the global supply of green tech, such as solar panels and batteries for electric vehicles. The BBC's China correspondent, Stephen McDonnell, reports from Beijing.
Standing in the street in Beijing, you can see the extent of the take-up of electric cars easily. There's one, two more close behind. You don't have to be a car expert to spot them. They have special green number plates. And there are 18 million already on the road. This year, nearly one in three passenger vehicles sold in China is said to have been electric. 44-year-old Zheng Zhe, who works in real estate, has owned several.
Many in my family have replaced their petrol cars with electric vehicles, and they're not going back.
As we drive around suburban Beijing, he explains that government tax breaks kept prices down at the beginning, and that other incentives have helped make the industry viable. Ask him about the problem of having to charge the battery.
In the past 2 years, the speed of building charging stations has been very fast. There are now more of them than petrol stations.
A 3.5-hour flight away in the south of the country, a huge auto show in Guangzhou gives you an idea of the money pouring into the electric vehicle industry. Half of the entire exhibition is made up of electric cars, many of them new brands that most will not have heard of. Certainly the salespeople on the floor of this cavernous space are talking up the bright future for China's EVs, which they expect to dominate globally in the years to come.
We can cut manufacturing costs and also make sure our EVs are good quality.
And the electricity driving China's electric cars is coming increasingly from non-fossil fuel sources, including hydro, solar and wind, which today deliver nearly half of the country's power. It's highly visible in the provinces to the north of Beijing, where the wind howls down off the Mongolian plateau. I'm standing on the hill looking down over Guantin Lake, and all around it there are wind turbines. And passing through are coal trains. And you can just hear by the constant sound how long the trains are. Here you have China's energy mix in a nutshell, the old and the new. The coal trains passing through fields filled with wind turbines. This challenge from renewable energy is expected to attract a level of pushback from fossil fuel companies. The recent boost in renewable energies in China has been phenomenal. For 12 years in a row, it's had more installed wind power than anywhere else. The country makes up 40% of all solar power produced in the world. According to the Carbon Brief website, China's overall carbon emissions could peak, then start falling years earlier than expected. Laurie Mulewerter was the report's author.
If China keeps up the current rate of additions of clean energy, emissions should fall next year, which would be well ahead of the schedule of peaking emissions before 2030.
There could be a fight looming. For years, China had been gradually moving away from fossil fuel output, but has reversed this, and new approvals for coal-fired power stations have skyrocketed.
There is a risk that when all of these new coal-fired power plants get added, you have powerful state-owned enterprises that have made the investments, that have an interest in making use of those investments, so they will push back. However, the clean energy industry has grown much, much bigger and more powerful, and there are no pushover anymore.
So we could be set for a showdown over whose electricity gets used to meet China's ever-expanding needs, with implications for the entire planet. I'm the BBC's Stephen McDonnell for Marketplace.
And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Our producer today was James Graham. I'm Leanna Byrne. Have a great day, and thanks for listening.